You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where I promise to no longer make lost jokes about Malaysian airline flights. Joining me today, via Skype, from Austin, Texas, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
I'm worried that Putin is the smoke monster. Seriously, he's trapped there in Russia, pretty much miserable a place, wants everyone else to suffer.
But he doesn't want to leave Russia, he wants to stay there, right?
Well, his tanks might want to leave Russia.
That's true. They just want to go into Ukraine. That is a concern. But
Poland next in line.
Yeah, maybe that's why Jacob has turned to objectivism, and that's something we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Also joining me today via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot?
Well, I'm not on any Malaysia Airlines flight, so I'm doing pretty well.
Oh, wow. I took the high road, too, and then you did that? I mean, think about that for a minute. I took the high road.
Unlike you two, I've been up for a while because it's 1 in the afternoon here for me. So
that's right.
I'm East Coast. Energized.
I remember those days on the East Coast.
Wait till we get to the story about the holes. I'm still editing jokes trying to decide which one I should tell and which one I shouldn't.
Well, that's the first story, and I would suggest with everything that's going on, let's not go light on Russia. So why don't we jump into it with the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Everybody panic. A giant hole has suddenly appeared in Siberia. No, this is not a metaphor. A mysterious, frightening, giant crater has suddenly appeared in Siberia, Russia. Not a lot of details or pictures. A couple grainy cell phone shots and some stupid-looking amateur video captures, but...
Wait, so is this hole Bigfoot?
Yeah, basically. It's a hole on top of Loch Ness Monster. It's basically weird. That's what we know about it. It's a giant hole in the ground. It measures about 262 feet in diameter. For you people who do that, that's 80 meters. And it doesn't look like a typical sinkhole because there's a giant cavern under it. So yeah, this is frightening as hell.
Yeah, people are saying it's like a UFO or something came out of there, right?
Yeah, the current... quote, plausible theories are meteor strike, giant worm from hell, and UFO drilling a la Star Trek.
That's what I thought it was. I thought it was a graboid.
Yeah, I expect us to find Boba Fett's armor at the bottom.
I thought it was a hellmouth, personally. I was a little excited that we'd start seeing slayers everywhere.
That's a good one, too. I hadn't even thought of the hellmouth. But yeah, that looks like it could be a hellmouth.
Yeah.
Maybe the Russian Buffy series finale happened.
Well, that would cause me to jam myself in a giant hole in the ground.
But if it's a meteor, wouldn't we have, like, observed a meteor that big hitting Earth? Like, are we really fucking unobservant if a giant meteor hit a hole in Russia and we just didn't notice it?
It's true. Although Russia is, you know, it's pretty big.
The more likely answer is that Russia's testing a weapon of some kind and it left that kind of... wound, I guess. I don't know if wound's right.
It's a giant laser.
Frickin' laser beam.
Or is it like the Godzilla trailer? All those supposed nuclear tests in Siberia were actually to stop a giant kaiju?
From one report says that if you get up close to the hole, you can hear faintly, up there is so much room where babies burp and flowers bloom. But that's unconfirmed at this point.
That would be the most awesome explanation.
You see him paragliding with the rainbow paraglider.
Also, Other more disgusting theories that this would be the Earth trolling us with a giant goatsy. Just putting that out there for all of your imaginary fun later on. So yeah, I have no idea, but this was the perfect story for the Midside because it's completely absurd and we love it.
But what is the scientific explanation they're giving?
Oh, I'm sure it's global warming.
It says it right here, right?
Yeah.
Anna Kurchatova from...
Well, yeah, I didn't want to read her name.
Why?
Anna, when
you're calling her explanation bullshit.
I think everyone should know and mock her for this explanation.
yeah, Anna from Sub-Arctic
Kurchatova.
Scientific Research Center.
The idiot's name is Kurchatova.
Tweet at Anna Kurchatova. Thinks the crater was formed by a water, salt, and gas mixture igniting an underground explosion, the result of global warming. She postulates that gas accumulated in ice mixed with sand beneath the surface, and that this was mixed with salt. Some 10,000 years ago, this area was a sea.
See, I don't even understand how you get global warming from any of that. Like, is the point the sea evaporated so much it became gas and then caused an explosion?
Justin, it's because science.
But I understand science on some level, I thought.
No, you see, if we increase CO2 into the air, then that causes all things. It replaces cause and effect. All things are caused by global warming, and all things caused are global warming.
I don't get it.
Thus saith the experts evermore.
Exactly.
I do want to say, though, that this other quote is very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Russian paper, there's an expedition on its way that includes two experts from the Center for the Study of the Arctic and one from Cryosphere Institute of the Russian Academy of Sciences. They plan to take samples of soil, air, and water from the scene. Either that's the premise for Alien versus Predator, or that's when they discovered the Fortress of Solitude in Man of Steel.
I hope it's one or the other, but not both.
It just looks like a giant rectum to me, personally.
We don't want to hear about your gay fantasies.
Hey, I got a list of them. Hold on. No, I won't do that.
Oh, we're not devolving, especially after that Malaysian plane joke?
Oh.
I thought we were just going as low as we could go in this episode.
Are you purposely saying it Mal-Asian, like bad Asian?
Maybe.
And not like Malaysian?
Maybe.
Or Firefly, Malcolm Reynolds, Mal.
Yeah, it's Mal as an Asian. Maybe
yes.
I'm purposely saying it as bad Asians because I think it's funny to call them bad Asians. Maybe.
Well, I know some Californians are hoping that out of the bottom of this giant pit of weirdness will just bubble up a whole new source of fresh water because those people are in a serious drought. In fact, the California State Water Resource Control Board voted to approve fines up to $500 a day for overuse of water in an effort to penalize anyone who isn't conserving. In fact, and this is where the story really kicks into awesome mid-sideness, Santa Cruz residents with hefty water fines can now attend Santa Cruz Water School, a free one-time class that, if completed successfully, eliminates all water penalties outright.
This is a common technique of California. When I first moved out here, I got one of those tickets for running a red light when I didn't. I just got stuck in the middle of the intersection on a left-hand turn, and then it turned red, and then they took a picture of me, because I'm just going to sit in the middle of the intersection, right? Mm-hmm. But I got one of those tickets, and they said, you don't have to pay the fine if you go to traffic school. So this is a common California technique.
Can you imagine this applied across the board, though? Yeah, we know you raped those people, but if you want to go to not raping school, then you don't have to go to prison. So, there you
go. I feel like that's in the future for California.
I know you crush those midgets with a pitchfork, but if you go to not crushing midgets with a pitchfork school, then we're going to let you off with just a warning.
Well, that's what the quote says. I don't know who said it, but it was, we don't want to penalize people. We want to educate people.
Creepy.
That's, yeah, exactly. That sounds like it was said by the warden from a particularly savage prison.
Right, said Joseph Stalin. It's just, the whole thing is bizarre.
That's a Floyd Ferris quote right there.
Floyd Ferris, Joseph Stalin, the guy from The Shawshank Redemption.
All be played by the same actor.
Probably. So,
yeah, he would play them well.
Yeah. That guy who's in that thing. So the thing I don't like about this is something I've said in previous podcasts and been panned for, and thus will say again for ratings, which is that California borders a fucking ocean. Oceans are, last I checked, filled with mass amounts of, wait, was it oil? No, it's water.
I wish it was oil. That'd be awesome.
It's water.
We but no, I agree.
Desalinate that water using mass amounts of electricity from fracking.
But that's expensive, Daniel. It's expensive to desalinate water. That's what somebody told us. That was their response on the podcast.
Fracking is raping Mother Earth, Daniel. Don't you know that?
It's going
to cause houses to explode.
To frack every inch of land in California and drive energy prices down so we can desalinate the fucking ocean.
So you're going to frack that land, baby. Frack it.
I agree with you. I think this article speaks volumes about our society. Think about what's going on. We're punishing people for overusing the most abundant resource on the planet and letting them out of their punishment if they just do what they're told from now on.
When you abstract it, it sounds so much worse.
We can just shut down the podcast right now, can't we? I mean, that sums it up. Like, that's it. Over.
Drop the microphone.
Over. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's a good use to drop the microphone.
Witness the farce right there, baby.
Except if I did that with my podcasting microphone, it wouldn't be as epic as when a rapper does it.
I just love the quote at the end, or towards the end. Thousands of dollars in penalties are being removed in exchange for an hour and a half or 2 hours of education. We want to redirect the anger over penalties and turn it into a positive experience.
If that doesn't make you reevaluate the public education system, I don't know what does.
What do they teach you?
2 hours of your life. Yeah, sure.
What do they teach you in water school?
They teach you all the ways to not use it. They probably say, like, use a 10-minute shower. One they're going to say that I used to not understand when I was a kid. When you're brushing your teeth, make sure that you're not leaving the faucet running, that you shut it off right when you start brushing your teeth, and then turn it on again when you need to rinse the toothbrush off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, there was a cartoon of the little fish in a pond.
I see some loony person like calling for an end to all private indoor plumbing and having all communities have like a public like bathroom in every neighborhood where everybody has to go and use a certain amount of water. No more plumbing inside your own home. I could see that happening out there in California.
Yeah, they have a perfect example called India.
Mm-hmm.
And legally, everyone has to have at least one shower buddy in the public shower.
That is what I'm supposed to.
This would work well in San Francisco.
Well, yeah, except like when they tell you you have to shower with the fat person.
you're a sizist. Justin.
Yeah, and you have to go. Then they try to find you, and you have to go to re-education classes for your sizism.
We don't accept that kind of thought here.
Like, are you two having sex? No, sir. He's just so big that he's pressing me against the wall.
As a small guy, that thought disturbed me. I feel like I was just sexually harassed on this podcast.
Well, that's a change from you sexually harassing. So, speaking of harassing, Comcast. Poor Comcast.
You can just end that there.
Yeah.
Comcast has been embarrassed by one of their customer service reps when Ryan Block, a customer, tried to call and cancel his service and was on the phone for a very long time because the Comcast rep demanded that he give him a reason for canceling his service.
Did he just not want to say, I don't want your business anymore? Is that like not considered a reason? Because that's technically a reason, isn't it?
Yeah, I just did this with Time Warner and had a similar situation, although slightly less frustrating in the sense that there is nowhere anywhere that tells you how to actually cancel your Time Warner. So I had to do the online chat and they said, yeah, we can help you with that. And then 5 minutes later, they said, you have to call this number to do it. And then I called the number and they said, you have to do it online. And it's just a giant, horrifying circle of giant hole in the ground hell.
Yeah, that was like last fall when I tried to sign up for the DirecTV web NFL package. And I kept calling them to find out information on it. Like, how does this work? How do you know I can have it? Because it said you can't have it if you can have a satellite dish. And I kept trying to call. And then remember, they just kept trying to sell me DirecTV. And I was like, look, I want to buy this package. I will give you $300 if you give me the information. But it was just they stayed on their script of just trying to sell me a satellite dish.
Yeah, this is what happens when you provide scripts to people who can't think. Scripts are fine, but you have to have people who can use their brain to figure out exactly how to put these scripts into action.
And you know who else can't think? The writer of this article. The lead paragraph says, a tech-savvy customer. We later find out that the tech-savvy customer is a vice president of AOL. Wouldn't that have been important to put in the lead paragraph?
Although you might have to take away tech savvy in AOL, I don't know.
Well, that was actually my next joke. Your business has to be doing pretty poorly if a VP from AOL is upset with your product.
Thinks you have shitty customer service. Yeah. There's no saving these people. We just need to shut them all down immediately and just go outside. That's how I feel.
The employee obviously has detachment issues. You know, you... So why are you leaving us? Please, why are you leaving us?
That actually would be a really interesting strategy to hire people with abandonment issues as the people who cancel your service.
Yeah.
Guilt you into staying.
We'll make
I
it
need
first.
You.
Just make all of them Jewish mothers.
Oh, I guess we won't be seeing much of each other anymore.
You want to cancel Comcast? Well, why don't you just stick a knife in my heart?
After everything I've done for you, you're just gonna call us and cancel?
And you never came for Thanksgiving.
We're gonna make a movie of this starring Seth Rogen, and I'm gonna be played by Barbara Streisand.
Every Jewish mother is played by Barbara Streisand now. So,
every Jewish mother wants to be portrayed by Barbara Streisand.
And this is actually a perfect transition to the next story too, right, Daniel?
Yeah, speaking of Jewish people. Oh no, wait.
I'm at the overly connected mother-son relationship in Jewish culture, the stereotype of it.
Yes. I just wanted to be more racist about it. So it turns out that there is a big jump in the number of millennials living with their parents. Shock.
Jewish.
And
I'm just kidding.
Aw. More Americans than ever live in multi-generational households, and the number of millennials who live with their parents is rising sharply, according to a study released on Thursday. A record 57 million Americans, or 18.1% of the population, lived in multi-generational arrangements in 2012. That's more than double the 28 million people who lived in such households in 1980.
Hmm. So
get out of your parents' basement, you losers. That's what I have to say.
You just spoke to our entire audience.
Well, I mean, how many of this is voluntary? Because, you know, there are, like, I mean, you know, like, Hispanic cultures, it's very common for a lot of generations to live in the house. I mean, so how much of it is a voluntary situation?
That was a really PC way of talking about the fact that Mexicans have no money and just squat.
I said Hispanics, not just Mexicans.
That's why it was very PC of you.
Which is unusual for this show. About 23 points.
We're all over the map today.
23.6% of people aged 25 to 34 live with their parents, grandparents, or both. That's up from 18.7% in 2007, so a pretty sharp rise since then. And just prior to the global financial crisis, and then up from 11% in 1980. So I think that there has to be more going on than just culture change here. I don't think we've changed that much demographically to have that big of a jump.
I do. There's a quote in there. I don't think you read it. It says, the sluggish job market and other factors have propelled the rise of millennials living in their childhood bedrooms. You know what the other factors are? Code for lazy entitled hipsters.
Okay, when I meant cultural change, I meant not enough Mexicans have moved here to change the percentage that much. But yes, sort of cultural ideals about things like that. Certainly. They're just squatting there waiting for their parents to die so they can take over the house.
Right.
Well, it's Obama's America, man.
It's This is open change we all so desperately needed.
There's no jobs. Kids got to live at home with their useless fucking degree.
The other thing I have to say is this story, it has couched in it this one observation that's really kind of, it freaks me out. You know, the one thing that really freaks me out about this country right now is China's basically propping us up, and that if they decided they didn't want to prop up the dollar anymore by just making cheap goods and selling them to us, our economy would collapse. The other is in this article, and the quote is, historically, large numbers of the elderly live with and are cared for by their own children. The share of people in the older age group living in multi-generational households rose between 2000 and 2012 to 22.7%. But the percentage of millennials living with their parents jumped even more. Now, what this reveals is one generation is carrying the country right now. And I've noticed this about my dad, and I've said it about him. He's improved the lives of everyone around him. And I don't know what the fuck is going to happen when he dies. So seriously, what the fuck is going to happen when this generation that's propping this country up right now stops working and or dies?
That is a very astute observation, Mr. Lesniewski. I think that that's worthy of a three claps. Well done.
Oh, I thought I was going to win some sort of like shorty award or something. I thought you were going to say now we should be shorty nominated, but three claps, I'll take it.
It's a start. It's a start. But that's and the point is well taken in the sense that if you abstract it even more, there are people who believe that it's right to work hard, produce, take care of the people they love, etc. And then there's a culture of people who are more like, the world owes me. I shouldn't have to work this hard for what I want. I'm a special little snowflake, etc., etc. And one of those, as you said, is definitely propping up the other. Well, it will never be the other way around.
I think that also we've created this mess by overselling college to a lot of young people for the past few couple of decades. Because now you have a lot of kids who have college degrees in fields where they're not going to find employment with them. Now, that's not to say that they won't eventually. I don't know what you would do with a woman's studies degree, but eventually you might find something with it. But that's the big problem. We don't have a lot of kids who are working in fields where there's a need.
Well, right. And not only that, and I speak from experience here, we give people degrees and we don't teach them then how to get a job afterwards or become part of the industry afterwards. Because some people might argue I have that sort of degree with my writing degree and then my master's in professional communication. But those are actually skills, and I have skills. But I honestly have no idea how to bring those into the marketplace. So it's been really difficult since I graduated, you know, and back in 2005 to try and find some sort of a job, because they were never like, okay, here's also your training on how to find a job and how to network with people.
That is an interesting part that they leave out that is insanely important, especially the networking element of it. I've just discovered how incredibly important that is, being a consultant and getting referrals and things like that. So you're right. I think the other element here, of course, is that welfare programs and entitlement programs are making it harder for people to save money in the long term. I was just listening to Don Watkins and the Debt Draft podcast, and he was talking about exactly how much money comes out of your pocket over your lifetime to pay into Social Security versus the percent you will actually get back. And it's astronomical. It's basically 14% of your income for the rest of your life gets taken out for you to get about 7% of that back, usually less.
Well, I'm depressed.
Yeah, I was just letting that one sink in with people. That's why I wasn't replying. Because there's not really much you can say about that.
Yeah, it's shitty.
But I mean, we knew a professor who always said that if they take 25% of your income throughout the year, that means basically for a quarter of the year, you're a slave. And it might have been even higher than that. It might have been like 50% or whatever the percentage they take of your income is. That was his point. He was saying, you know, they say it's per pay cycle, But if you actually take that and add it all together, it actually adds up to like 25% of the year you're a slave to the government.
Yeah. And some of the things that people refuse to point out or don't think about is that your employer also pays half of your Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid tax. So even if you think that you're only putting 10% of your paycheck in, your employer is putting that amount in as well. And you know where that's coming from? Wages they could have paid you.
Right.
Benefits could have given you.
Those are resources the company had that they have to allocate towards paying the government where, you know, maybe it doesn't go to your wages eventually, but it could go to improving product. Maybe it goes to R&D, research and development for a company. And then the company has a better product for us all to buy.
We just had a huge thing down here in Orlando at Disney, the union contracts, which just settled a couple of days ago. And I've been screaming that at everybody's faces that will hear me, which has been very awkward at work. But anybody that will listen that, you know, when you demand more benefits, more things, it has to get paid for. You can't be shocked when you start getting more things taken out of your check or when benefits that you had before start going away. I mean, people just don't have a sense of cause and effect anymore.
Yeah, we had a story a couple weeks ago about what was the business in Seattle that was happening in?
It was an airline, I think Alaskan Airlines or something like that.
Yeah, same exact thing.
Exactly. Things need to change. But you know what doesn't need to change? Is friggin' Captain America and Thorita, or whatever her name is. Marvel is making huge changes to their characters in response to this seemingly invisible demand for diversity in their characters.
They're trying to tap into the female demographic. They want women to buy comic books.
Are they going to?
Nobody buys comic books anymore, and they're worried about getting women to buy them.
In a special segment of the Colbert Report this week, Marvel announced that Steve Rogers, otherwise known as Captain America, will pass his star-spangled shield onto Sam Wilson, aka the Falcon. The thing about Sam Wilson is that he is black and will be the first black man to take on the official role of Captain America. This, of course, comes on the heels of Marvel also announcing their plans to change Thor into a woman this fall. And make it not, you know, Thor, like I said, Thorita or Thor the woman. It's just Thor. Regular plain old Thor will now be a vagina carrier.
But wasn't Thor his name? I mean, it's not like a secret identity. He was Thor.
Well, right. And this is the retarded thing about the whole story, right? Even with Captain America, the Captain America character is Steve Rogers. So to me, this whole thing is just a name game, and this is like if Tom Brady retired and we gave his replacement the 12 Brady jersey and called him Tom Brady.
He's the new Tom Brady.
I think everybody's trying to copy off of Doctor Who. Gee, we can't do regeneration. What do we need to do to reinvent the character?
I mean, technically, with Captain America, not so much. They're more reaching. But if you look at you know, the mythology of Thor, at least from the movie, because I'm not going to pretend like I've read the comics. But if you look at it from the movie, it's whoever holds Thor's hammer has the power, right? So theoretically, just like the Excalibur, the Sword in the Stone, a woman could come along and pick up the hammer. But well, my point is, yes, she has the power, but that doesn't make her the character of Thor. I mean,
correct.
I don't have a problem if you want to make her a Norse guard and make her wield the hammer, but don't rename her Thor.
So, to mildly shit on your point, but not entirely, just a little dookie on your point, is that so the Steve Rogers thing makes absolutely no sense, because Captain America is Steve Rogers, he was given the serum, et cetera. The Thor thing in the mythology and the comic books changes insanely over time, like many of the comic books do. So like one of the original storylines for Thor was that there was a guy, I forget his name, who discovered Thor's hammer in a cave and picked it up, and because he was righteous and whatnot, was given the power of Thor.
Right. So I honestly don't have as much of a problem with the Thor thing.
Yeah, that's slightly less annoying, if still stupid, because of the reasons they're choosing to do it.
Right. This is all like when they made Spider-Man the Hispanic teenager, remember? They killed off Peter Parker, and then they were like, we're going to give another kid the power of the spider and give him the costume and everything. Which is fine, but just call him like Spider-Man 2.0 or give him another name like Arachnid Boy. Because as you're saying, the essential of the character is the struggle that Peter Parker goes through or the struggle that Steve Rogers goes through.
Right. Could have been Spider Hombre. So one thing I thought was, one thing that I can say that, to be offensive about all of this is that, why did they pick such common races or genders? Like, if you're gonna be diverse, why are you just picking black and woman? Like, why not pick, you know, Puerto Rican and transgender? Or, you know, quadriplegic? You want to be diverse, but you're picking such obvious choices. And even like if they had come up with a Jewish superhero, I would have been shocked.
Well, they have a Muslim superhero.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. In one of the articles, it says that.
Well, that I'm not shocked about. But again, Jewish superhero, totally shocked. But that did lead me down a very interesting Wikipedia path, which is that I looked up if there
are
Jewish superheroes.
I'm really missing the boat here. Like, I feel like, is it Woody Allen a Jewish superhero? But that's the best joke I can come up with.
So there are superheroes who are Jews, but there's no one like the Muslim superhero who part of her identity is that she's a Muslim. There's no equivalent of that in Judaism. But I did find out, for instance, that Batwoman is Jewish.
I hate to say this, but you're an idiot. What? You know who the most famous Jewish comic book character is?
Who?
Magneto.
Yes, I was literally about to say Magneto. But again, it comes later in his character.
Not in the movies. I mean, they kind of led with that, how Magneto's this way because he doesn't want to deal with the Nazis again because of the Holocaust.
Yes, but in the comics it comes much later.
Fuck the comics. Go movies!
Also, not a hero.
I know, that was the other thing I was gonna say.
My point still stands, so suck it.
Although we know someone who argues that Magneto is right and Professor X is wrong, because apparently killing all the humans is a good thing.
Yeah.
I wanna, while we're being super offensive and racist and everything.
Okay.
What's gonna happen when no one can find Sam Wilson's birth certificate?
Thank you.
By the way, in other comic news, you know, they're killing off Archie Andrews. Archie! They're gonna kill him off! The lead of Archie Comics!
Is he the one with the hamburgers?
No, that's Jughead. That's his friend.
I mean, but they killed Superman in the 90s. That's the thing about all of this. We can sit here and we can talk about this. The reason I'm mainly just making fun of it and calling it stupid is they're just gonna erase it.
Yeah, it's just a marketing ploy. They're not selling any, so they wanna sell more.
Right.
But just to put a cap on my Jewish, cause there, I only found literally one Jewish superhero who is at all known for his Jewishness, apparently, which is the most racist you could possibly think of, which is The Thing.
Why is that racist?
He's called The Thing.
That's because he is a thing. That has nothing to do with him being Jewish.
Jewish.
He's a Jew. He's a thing.
Well, now I'm really upset Seth Rogen didn't play The Thing in the new Fantastic Four movie.
He even has his own section about religion on his Wikipedia page. So, anyway. Well,
good for him.
That's all I got.
We could be fairer to Marvel. Random character changes are in vogue these days. As we mentioned earlier, Jacob from Lost has apparently renounced his godlike ways. Find out what I mean next in TV with JML. So, recent Twitter events, which is the way you always want to start a segment / story, have revealed some things that, once again, have changed my perception of Lost, beyond the fact that I discovered Larry Fong, Zack Snyder's cinematographer, also worked on the first season of Lost. Daniel, you want to tell our audience what I'm talking about?
Jacob, the all-knowing, all-benevolent, almighty Jacob, has been tweeting a lot of things that would be contrary to his character in Lost, He's actually been tweeting a lot of objectivist things.
Yeah, he might sound more like the smoke monster now.
Exactly. Of course, we're talking about Mark Pellegrino, who tweets at Mark R. Pellegrino. And over the past few months, starting even as early as May of this year, he started slowly tweeting things from an objectivist publication called the Objective Standard. And he started tweeting things like, "Wow, this is interesting. I know this is riveting. It gets better, I promise, listeners." Or things like, "Never thought about it this way. What do you guys think of this?" And then over time, he started getting stronger and stronger in his recommendations. Things like, "Will this change your mind?" Tweeting a blog post from the Ayn Rand Institute about who's that guy? Thomas Piketty in his economics book. And so that sort of, he's been doing this on and off for quite a while. Actually a lot of positive reaction from his fans, surprisingly. And it sort of culminated in a recent tweet on July 13th, where he tweeted a picture of The Virtue of Selfishness by Ayn Rand. And he said, "The greatest book on ethics ever written. Read it if you dare." I know.
See, I think this is really interesting because if you look at the characters he's played, and obviously the major one I'm referring to is Jacob, his roles have been very concerned with this sort of morality. And I don't mean like concerned with objectivism. I mean just these considerations of morality. The whole Jacob smoke monster binary dichotomy was about, you know, what is morality? What is the purpose of it? Why should we do the things we do? How should we interact with each other? Likewise, he played Satan on Supernatural, which makes you reconsider certain moralities to understand the character.
Right.
And then Elliot, you said he's on the Tomorrow People. What's that character like on the Tomorrow People? Because he has a big role on that, right?
He does. I think he's the villain, I think. I haven't actually watched it, which is really bad. But I know he's on it. And in fact, I'm reading his tweets right now. It's interesting because he just gave a really, really, really good explanation about the proper role of government to somebody that's tweeting at him. So that was very, very good.
Yeah. What's surprising is not just that he's taken on some of the laissez-faire principles, which many artists have, even if they're not as vocal about it. What he's really getting into is delving into the philosophy behind them. One of the articles that he tweets that he really loves is an Objective Standard piece called "Libertarians Fiddle While Rome Burns," which is a more nuanced critique of libertarian ideology as it compares to objectivism.
And well, one of the other, fair, there are a lot of libertarians in Hollywood that, you know, you hear that there's a lot of liberals. There's a lot of libertarians from the leftist point of view. So he probably hears that a lot.
Right. Exactly. And so another one of the more nuanced, points that he's taken up is objectivist foreign policy, which is probably, so let's say that all objectivist ideas are hated in general. Objectivist foreign policy is probably by far the most hated of all of the ideas in terms of a concrete.
Right, and that's why I'm saying a lot of this has to do with the roles he's played. Because one of my theories about actors is they're so good of pretending to be someone else and taking on this other persona that you notice that, you know, it said that Heath Ledger killed himself because he played the Joker. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. But if you look at these actors, when you engage with these other roles, it forces you to look at life from other points of view. And I think the role he has been typecast in, you know, if he's playing the villain in the Tomorrow People, he's played Satan, he's played this god who, Jacob was ultimately meant to be a critique of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's forced him to look at things from these perspectives and question things to the point that it led him to looking for answers.
Yeah.
But I have a question about Lost now. Although this might be mitigated when we get to the Strain review we're going to do in a few minutes here because of Carlton Cuse. But one of my things about Lost is I think the casting choices were so phenomenal that it made the writing seemed better than it was. And, you know, I'm talking about Matthew Fox was the perfect character to play Jack, right? Because he's kind of that douchey, will cry at a drop of a pin guy anyway. And Josh Holloway was the perfect person to play Sawyer.
Yeah.
Now, is it the same thing for Jacob? Was Jacob not actually meant as a critique of Christianity, and it was just the way Mark Pellegrino played the character?
That's a good question. I think sometimes we undervalue how much an actor can change a role. And I think knowing what we know now about Mark Pellegrino, and that he's probably at least been interested in these ideas since he was on Lost, maybe if not into objectivism per se, I think that it did color it in some way, which is what I think you and I were picking up on the entire time we were watching it and saying something is up about Jacob. Something, there's some conflict or there's something not right about his character.
Right. Like he, let's be serious. He played him kind of douchey. And I don't know if that was intentional.
Right.
But on the other hand, that's a responsibility of the showrunners and of the casting director to get right. So
yes,
you guys fucked that up, Lindelof and Cuse. And I don't think it was Cuse again. I think it was Lindelof. I think Cuse wanted that. But mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a second. Speaking of other shows that are made a billion times better by their actors, apparently scenes are being cut from the Walking Dead premiere of the new season in the fall for being too violent. Why are you laughing about this, Daniel?
I can't even imagine what that would be. Like, I can't even imagine what it is that they said, you know, half blown up bodies okay, but three quarters blown up bodies not okay. Like, I don't know what they could have chosen to cut that isn't just some nuanced version of what they've already shown.
Right, and that's kind of the ridiculous line they've walked in the whole series, right? I mean, minor spoiler for people who haven't seen the back half of season 4.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
Rick Grimes basically goes vampire on somebody and rips out someone's jugular with his teeth. That's okay, yeah. But whatever they cut has to be cut. Or, you know, they implied the governor raped Maggie and they never said it. Or they never showed it or even said it. So, mm-hmm. You know, the lie, I don't understand the line for these standards anymore. Like you saying, the whole show is just pure violence, isn't it?
Right. And it's pretty gory stuff already. So I don't know what you can add that would make us, I mean, could it be anything worse than what's on Game of Thrones? Like, I don't.
Well, Game of Thrones is also not on basic cable.
Yeah, but nonetheless, I don't know if I would say that Walking Dead is any less, I don't know what the word is, gory, horrifying than Game of Thrones, but what
do I know? This is all about the DVD sales. They want to cut the scenes so that when the DVD goes on sale or the Blu-ray, people will pay the money to see the deleted scenes. That's what it's all about.
Theorists. I even read a comment that said they're not actually cutting scenes. This is just
this
PR.
Is just a marketing PR thing?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, maybe they cut one thing or something and they're blowing it up as huge cuts in the scenes because of violence.
It's not that. It's the actors are shocked by the material. And the actors keep giving quotes where they say, I don't know how they're going to air any of this.
Yeah, but they're actors. What do they know?
They know a lot about objectivism, apparently.
Touché. Salesman.
By the way, the whole biting the jugular out of somebody's neck thing, Jack Bauer already did that, so.
That's true too, and that was on network TV, so, well, that's a good point. Well done.
Well done, sir.
Yeah,
I was gonna say it's gonna end up being like, I think it was Mad TV that did, Pax TV picking up The Sopranos.
Yes!
It was, it says this week on The Sopranos, who the, what the, why the, where the mother next week for another episode of The Sopranos.
That also sounds exactly like a Mad Men preview, where they pick random quotes and have them say it, and then it's like it reveals about the episode.
Yeah.
I'm upset, Don. Well, you shouldn't be upset. And then Roger's like, I'm going to the country. And then that's the end of the entire preview.
Sounds like Downton Abbey. What are you watching? I'm going to the country. Don.
Have you ever seen a Mad Men preview? It might as well be Downtown Abbey.
I would fall a fucking sleep because that show is so fucking boring.
It's a Downton Abbey preview that they watched in Malaysia.
Downton
Abbey.
No, it's Downton Abbey. But speaking of horror shows that I don't know how they're going to show the violence, The Strain premiered this previous Sunday, which unfortunately means we're going to release this episode after its second episode, just based upon our recording/release schedule and their recording/release schedule. But I watched this show because it is done by Carlton Cuse, who I am starting to think is like the best television writer in Hollywood that secretly nobody really knows about for some reason, even though he does everything now. And it was also done by Guillermo del Toro. He directed the pilot and he's produced the show. My personal thought on it was that it was very good. What did you think, Daniel?
I thought it was integrated very well, and it was well paced. The story was interesting. It revealed enough, sort of every scene, that it didn't feel like it dragged at all. There was a sense of mystery and horror to it, while at the same time being actiony enough that it didn't feel like a Mad Men slow fucking episode. So overall, I thought it was interesting. I was a little taken aback because I didn't know anything about this, by the way. Not a single thing. I hadn't heard anything about it, read anything about it. You just said watch it, and so I did. When they're sort of being like, spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
Vampires or something. People eating people. Like, I was like, Do I have to watch another vampire show?
Vampires in The Strain.
Everyone knows that?
Yeah, that was a part of the big marketing push where Carlton Cuse said he wants to make vampires scary again. He doesn't want to make them sparkly and romantic. He said that. I don't want to make it seem like I said that.
That's interesting. So I didn't know that. And so when it came to the vampires, I sort of went, awesome. Okay, all right. Well, we'll see. And the other thing was, I mentioned this to you before, there was a little bit of writing that was too on the nose for me, which is like the evil corporation was named the Stoneheart Corporation, and they were all Germans. It's like, okay, I get it.
Well, there was a whole Holocaust metaphor in here, right?
Yes, yes.
Where the vampires, you know, they had Dracula in his coffin, and he's this big monster who's trying to cleanse the world of everyone except vampires, and they're trying to make their master race live.
Yeah.
And everyone else die, and they're going to start the plague in New York City.
Yeah, and then the guy who apparently has hunted them previously, we don't get a lot of his backstory.
But he had the Van Helsing hat.
He did have the Van Helsing hat. It was very cool. And he was a badass old man, and he was Jewish.
Yeah, he did look super Jewish. Like, part of me was like, is that Dumbledore? Is that Magneto? I mean, I'm sure I've seen him before, and I just can't remember where, but I was just like, which old guy with gray hair and a long beard are you?
Who has a sword in his cane and can kick ass.
Right, and then so, that was, I think that was my favorite funny part of it, when they randomly had a scene where the vampire minion at the corporation was like, is he still at it? I'll take care of him.
But it was more like, is he still at it? I will take care of the Jew. Yes. It was super stereotypical. But so I think all in all, it was a very good premiere. Probably one of the better premieres I've seen, maybe save for Lost. So I think it kept my interest enough that I want to know what happens in the next episode or two. We'll see after that, but yeah.
The key for me of everything you said is the word integration. And the thing I love about the show is how everything is integrated around vampire mythology and what that means as a statement on humanity. Now, vampires have always been about human love and lust, correct? That's why they bite the neck. That's why sometimes, especially like on True Blood, they bite the inner thigh, right? These are the places where a lot of blood flows. And then that's why Twilight, they've pushed it all the way to the love side where they've made it so they're no longer threatening. They took this and they pushed it to the other side and they made the vampire super threatening. And what they did, which I think is so interesting and so awesome, is they combined that with the common American hero archetype in the main character. And what I'm talking about is the character of Ephraim. And they combine that with making love our greatest weakness, which is something that culturally is just so actually subversive and so shocking that they would do it. And what I'm referring to is Ephraim really reminded me of Jimmy McNulty from The Wire. Now, granted, I've only seen the first two seasons, but remember one of the things I talked about was they did the whole thing that McNulty can't work without or can't live without his work, and he was destroying himself because he didn't have his work, and that he was drinking and he wanted to get back with his ex-wife and take care of his kids, and the wife said he couldn't take care of the kids, and she was mad he was always working, that type of deal. And he actually, in The Wire, he sleeps with one of the DAs or the ADAs because he's always working with her.
Yeah.
I mean, that everything I just described is almost exactly Ephraim's character. So the whole show starts with he is in couples therapy with his wife because his wife wanted him to try and do that, to try and get back together. And all she's complaining about to him is, you're never present. And him never being present is he's doing his job, which he's really good at, and his job is the CDC. He's the first responder. He goes and figures out what's going on. And she's mad about that with him. So he's basically given this choice of love or doing what you're good at and being yourself.
Right. Yeah, it was interesting. I forget the guy who plays – what's his real name? Do you know?
No,
off
I don't.
The top of your head? But he plays that character very nuanced, I thought, especially in his interactions with his – co-worker, which who you find out they had a relationship or at least a brief affair. And what I mean by nuance is in the way he interacted with the wife and kid versus her versus what he was doing on his job. You could tell were the same character, well thought out psychology, but very nuanced in how he approached that. And I've seen him before in other things, and I didn't think he was that talented, but this show, I think, is really going to showcase how good of an actor he is.
Yes, partially because that's all done in the writing. And what I mean by that is they're showing those themes, or they're showing those different manifestations of his character to parallel the themes.
Yeah. You want to know a bizarre, like, 3 degrees of separation for this character?
Yes.
So his name in the show is Ephraim, and his nickname is F. And so this guy also plays a senator or a representative in the new House of Cards series, who's a loser. But in the original House of Cards series, the main character, Francis Urquhart, his nickname is F. So I'm excited for the next episode and at least the next couple, and we'll see which path it takes, if it becomes hokey or if it stays mature.
I'm excited about it. I think it's going to stay mature. I think Carlton Cuse, the more I see the work he does, you know, if we look at Bates Motel, if we look at this show, I think he was really responsible for the nuance on Lost, considering he went to Harvard and he's a very well-educated man. Because not only did he go to Harvard, he majored in history, which that's different from majoring in any of these other, like Elliot said, women's studies. Majoring in history makes you have some sort of knowledge of humanity in its past.
And we would be remiss if we didn't mention, I think, that the directing was superb.
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro is fucking awesome when he's actually given depth of content. But then if you give him large fighting robots, he's basically just like Michael Bay.
Still loved that movie. Still loved it. So, yeah.
Now, if you think The Strain is scary, wait until you hear what we have in store for you in Yahoo Answers Answers.
It has to do with feminism. It's just another question. Just another answer, I won't begin. Just another question. Just another answer, I won't begin.
First question. Hypothetical question. And I yelled it like that because it's in all caps. I mean, I don't know which questions on Yahoo Answers aren't hypothetical. Anyway. Would you rather have an IQ of 200 or have the strength of 10 average grown men?
10 average grown men combined? Or just the average of 10 grown men?
I think it means combined.
Okay.
But that doesn't make it funny. It's not like 10 really, like, it's not like 10 NFL linemen or linebackers or something.
Yeah. But still, like, if it was still 10 plus, then you'd probably be stronger than a really strong guy. So you could at least, like, lift a small pony or something, right?
Yes, presumably. Yeah. They think these are equivalent, basically.
200 or could lift a horse.
Yeah, I don't think they know what the IQ scale is.
Right. So assuming that if I take the IQ, I just have the strength of one average me still, is that okay? Or do I lose all strength?
No.
And then if I take the strength, do I lose all IQ?
No, it doesn't.
I would
you
take the IQ.
You become the mountain of Game of Thrones if you take the strength.
I would just take the IQ because I'm sort of okay being able to lift, you know, a moderately heavy box right now, and not a horse or a horde of children or something.
Elliot?
I would have the IQ. I would go for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to.
It doesn't.
If I had to pick. Because if you have a big IQ, and I don't know how, like, I don't know how big the IQ scale goes, but if you have a good IQ, you could probably figure out a way to give yourself the strength of 10 average grown men.
Or couldn't I just convince 10 average grown men to move my shit for me?
Yeah. Brain power, baby. Age of the
geek. Or, as I was going to say, you could just go to the gym. I mean, it's not going to give you the strength of 10 men combined, but it's going to give you more strength than you probably actually need.
Yeah. That strength would be difficult on a day-to-day basis. Wouldn't you just start crushing shit all the time, like by accident?
Yeah, I mean, we saw that in
Mr. Incredible.
Yeah, Mr. Incredible. Or was it the original Spider-Man where he was having trouble with that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Especially when he was masturbating, it was just a mess. But like if you're hugging like your frail grandmother and you just turn her to dust or
Aunt
something.
May.
Oh,
yeah. Aunt May. Like, it seems like there would be a lot of downside to the strength of 10 men.
But what about the downside of intelligence where you can't interact with anyone anymore because they just frustrate the fuck out of you?
Oh, ennui. How terrible. Get the fuck over it. Or figure out how to give other people a super intelligence.
So now this is eugenics. So you just said if you get the 200 IQ, you end up a Nazi?
Yes. IQ 200, ergo Nazi.
Next question. How can I introduce an Asian character surprisingly in a novel?
Surprise!
Like this.
Ha-cha!
Ha-cha!
Make him come out from behind a plant. That's always surprising to me.
Is that what they mean?
Well, this is what they say. I have a novel that I'm writing. Well, I would think if you're introducing a character. Anyway. And there's this character you hear about from the beginning that I made sound Irish and white. Comma between Irish and white. Look, I'm only making fun of this person's writing this time because they claim they're writing a book. That's why. I want to write a bit where I shock the audience about his Filipino complexion when the main character and he finally meet up. I don't know how to do that. Do you guys have any way? I already wrote the next part where the main character says, wait, I didn't tell you that he's Filipino.
What?
I totally forgot to mention this completely irrelevant fact that this person I'm friends with, by the way, Filipino.
First of all, please send hate mail to drichards@gmail.com. Filipino, not really Asian, right? Sort of Pacific like Islander. Pacific Islander.
Look, my girlfriend's Filipino, so.
Yeah, I know. And we, you know, this sort of like honorary Asian, but not really.
You couldn't even say honorary in a really thick Asian accent.
I don't even know how you would do that. That's
honorary.
Impossible to pronounce. Impossible to pronounce in an Asian accent.
I was just picturing what Ling Ling saying it. Anyway,
right? It's like the shampoo Prel cannot be pronounced in any Asian dialect.
Anyway, the point I'm making is it depends on the kind of Filipino. And what I mean by that is, There's basically two kinds.
There's nurses and mailmen.
Yes, nurses and mailmen. No. Okay. What I mean is, there's the, you know, there's the people who are islanders and they grew up there and they didn't mix with any other race. And then there's the ones who mix with the Chinese.
Hmm.
So it depends.
So we need to ask this guy which Filipino he means, because that'll depend on the surprise.
Right. I don't think he really knows.
Hmm. And if he's a racist.
And if it's part Chinese, you just say, surprise, MSG.
I just don't get the importance.
No MSG.
By the way, my girlfriend just gave me the finger if anyone was wondering.
Well, I just don't get the point though. I don't get why, what does it matter? Is the main character of the novel like a racist or someone to whom race or ethnicity matters? Like, what does it matter? I mean, if you describe the character as Filipino, then do that. But why, what does it matter how the main character perceives him? Or why?
He's writing a sequel to Gran Torino.
Gran Torino.
Yeah. By the way, when I saw that movie, I was the only person in the theater laughing, and everyone was looking at me uncomfortably. Because I thought the things Clint Eastwood's character was saying was hilarious.
Yes. He took over the Hmongs. Now he's after the Filipinos.
By the way, I think we're focusing on the wrong thing.
Oh, are we?
Really?
Really?
He wants to introduce an Asian character. Surprisingly, Asian surprise, like, what? This has to be a troll, right?
It's a very funny way of saying what he's saying. Yes, I find it amusing. It reminds me of that picture of the ninja parade that goes through town, and it's just an empty street. Like, it's just, they're gonna be surprising, no matter what.
Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, it's like, Elliot says, there's so much context dropped in this question. Surprising to who? Why is it surprising? What does that have to do with the theme of it? I mean, maybe the character is racist. Maybe he doesn't like Asians. Maybe he loves Asians. There could be any number of reasons for this, but it's just
yeah,
not
maybe
explained.
He has an Asian fetish.
He could.
Yeah, and he was disappointed because the guy was white and Irish.
Yeah. We're all disappointed when the guy ends up being Irish. Fucking Irish.
All right, you racist Pole.
That was the Italian side of me. Come on. Nobody understands that the Italian and Irish hate each other. Anyway.
I can't keep up with your various whiteness ethnicities.
I just hate everyone because I'm white.
You're so multicultural.
Hey, as we learned last week in the Midside, there is more than one type of white person. I will not let this go, ever.
You know, it's interesting. If you look at it from a screenwriting perspective, just to pretend to take the guy's question seriously, I guess you could maybe have the Filipino character talk with a southern accent. Like maybe he's Filipino, but he was born and raised in Texas. His family's from the Philippines. And when, you know, throughout the, I don't know, he expects to see like some Irish southern dude and he gets a Filipino. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, it's
I'm trying to solve his problem for him.
It's funny you say that because the director I work with, you know, he directed Such Good People, the movie that's currently looking for a distributor. It's just done a bunch of premieres starring Michael Urie and Randy Harrison that I worked on. He's also doing a bunch of shorts, and they're called The Coffee House Chronicles, and it's going to be about gay men meeting in coffee houses and then the ridiculous situations they get into. And the first one he shot is called Secret Asian Man. In it, a guy meets another guy at a coffee house, and the guy has sunglasses on. And then he goes home, and he takes off the sunglasses, and the guy's like, wait, you're Asian? I thought you were Hispanic. So you could do it that way.
With shades, these big old shades. Roy Orbison style. Roy Orbison.
It could be really bright outside, I guess.
Right, it was an outdoor coffee house, to be clear. He wasn't just wearing
While we're giving other ridiculous suggestions.
All right. Are we ready for the next question?
Oh, yeah. God, we are.
Next question. And maybe Mark Pellegrino can answer this for us. What's the difference between a greedy government and a greedy corporation? Now, the reason I included this question is I really like the follow-up statement. It's a large Democrat v. Republican Dawn of Justice, it doesn't say Dawn of Justice, thing. So I was curious to what you think the difference is. I really like that they point out that this is the common dichotomy, the common binary. I think that that says a lot that they were able to identify that.
There's a lot you can do with
that. It also depends. So there's a little bit of context here that we'll just have to provide. And if he likes the answer or she likes the answer, they like it. If they don't, they don't. Which is that greedy government or greedy corporation in a free economy or in a controlled economy. So a greedy corporation in a free economy is simply a corporation that's going to go out of business because competitors are going to pop up and put them out of business. But a greedy corporation in a controlled economy, which is sort of coupled with a greedy government, is dangerous.
Right, a corporatist economy.
Yes, exactly. So to the other side of that, a greedy government in a free economy is kind of impossible because they greedy what? In a free economy, they can't tax you, so there's nothing to gain. They could be corrupt, but then they would be ousted or overthrown. Versus a greedy government in a controlled economy where they can tax more and more of your money and you can't do anything about it except violent revolution.
Right. That's how I took the question, was the malevolent sense of both. You know, a greedy corporation as the way Democrats portray, leftists portray greedy corporations, always trying to cut around, take advantage of people, manipulate them. And the same thing, greedy government as Republicans portray them. Does that make sense that that's how I took the question?
Sure.
Right. And to me, the difference is pretty simple. And it's along the same lines of what you said, Daniel. The difference is, in a society where there's objective laws, greedy corporations can be stopped because they are beholden to those laws. However, a greedy government can never be stopped. And that's the difference. The only way, as you said, a greedy government can be stopped is violent revolution.
But what does he mean? What does the questioner mean by greedy? Is he using it in the common sense of acting in self-interest?
No, because he's using it in the sense of, well, yeah, self-interest in the negative sense that people use, not rational self-interest, very short-sighted, manipulating people, using them, lying, cheating, stealing self-interest. Okay.
Alright, because I think that's established first. Because in the context of rational self-interest, a corporation uses that to make themselves better and to hold themselves accountable. And whereas a government, you know, trying to pursue its self-interest, I don't think you can do a rational self-interest with government.
Yeah.
Well, right, if we're talking about greedy in the understood sense, as in, you know, like the proper sense, as Daniel just said, that... Yeah. Rand rewrote in Atlas Shrugged where she pointed out greedy is usually just used as a pejorative against people who are trying to make as much money as possible in a rational sense. Then yes, it's impossible for government definitionally to be greedy. But that's what I was saying, that it's the conventional definition of greedy and the conventional definition of greedy government and greedy corporation.
Right. So what is he asking in that conventional sense then, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yes. I think we can assume that people who ask questions on Yahoo Answers are conventional.
Touche, salesman.
Next question. What is the difference between a genuine nice guy and a nice guy? Not difference, different. And I only mocked that one because it was very extreme. So there's sort of a long explanation here. So I'm going to read this. What's the difference between a nice guy and a... quote, nice guy. I was seeing some things online that kind of upset me. All right, I'm going to stop there for a second. So you are using the internet correctly. Congratulations. Continuing. Because it said that being nice to a girl doesn't mean she has an obligation to date you. With you, which I 100% agree. I think it just means which I 100% agree with. But that's not my issue. My problem is like, why does that need to be stated? Because me personally, I'd like to think of myself as a nice guy. And if I really like a girl, it'd be cool if we get together sometime. But if you don't want to date me, I respect that. You don't owe me a date just because I'm nice to you or like you. There are other qualities besides nice that you may look for in a boyfriend that I don't have, which may be physical or social. That doesn't make you a shallow girl. I mean, I won't date a girl just because she's nice to me, because that makes no sense at all, right? I guess what I'm saying is, what's the difference between a genuine nice guy, that, and a nice guy? He adds extra words here for no reason. Like, why was the word that in there? That makes a girl say being nice to a girl doesn't mean she has an obligation to date you or having sex with you. Does he, like, say something, or does he act in a certain way that makes it obvious he just wants to have sex with a girl or wants to date her, but is bitter that his kindness didn't get the girl he wanted? This question just came up because I saw a meme that said, what if I told you being nice to a girl doesn't mean she has an obligation to, has the obligation to date you?
What a revelation. My goodness.
So I think the definition of nice here is guy who wants to date a girl but not do her. That seems to be, that seems to be the only distinction I can make here between a nice guy and a genuinely nice guy.
Well, I
so
mean,
the first kind of,
oh, okay, I see what you're saying. I think the difference is, what he's talking about is, the term nice guy has been so taken over and redefined that he's trying to define someone who's actually just nice to people. And what he means is, nice without any expectation of anything, any sort of reciprocity. Whereas a nice guy, quote unquote, is a guy who's only nice to girls because he thinks that's a way to get, that's the way to get them to sleep with you. So that's what I took the dichotomy as.
So it's acting nice versus being genuinely nice.
Right. And the problem he's identifying here is that if a guy is nice to a girl he likes and then gets upset she doesn't like him and he's like, well, why? I was nice to you. I treated you well. These feminists take it as him saying she has an obligation because he treated her well to sleep with him. And that makes it so they think that no one is actually being genuinely nice. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue that he's getting at, because what he's basically saying is, I have no idea how to be nice anymore because it's always taken as subversive and not real.
Yeah. It's a complex thing, but Elliot, I know you've been doing some thinking about this lately, or you read something that was interesting about it. So,
yeah. Well, to me, first of all, I have to agree with Christopher Lee when he said on the commentary for the Lord of the Rings that, you know, to call the word nice is a very, it's a terrible thing to say that someone is a nice person, because it's such an elastic word, I think. I just think niceness or nicety or whatever you want to say, it's the wrong trait to try to develop, because, I mean, anybody can be nice to anybody else. You can't rely on that as any kind of marker as to whether you're compatible with somebody or not. You have to look at other traits, look at their, whether they're honest, look at their integrity, look at, whether they can hold down a job, look down, you know, how they treat their family, treat their parents, you know, look at how they take care of themselves. I mean, when he says that there are other qualities, but those, there are traits and then there are actual genuine qualities that you have to look for that are not necessarily immediately visible. So nice is just not going to cut it. Stop trying to be nice, quote unquote, and just develop the other traits that are much more valuable to other people.
But I think that that's where sort of the disagreement over this term nice guy comes with. Because, as I said before, a lot of the definition of nice guy conventionally is treats a girl well. And I think treats a girl well has a lot of what you're saying in it. You know, is honest, is respectful, cares for the other person's needs. And then these guys get frustrated when, you know, conventionally it's said they get frustrated when the girl doesn't want them, and then quote unquote, the feminists say back, well, they don't have an obligation to sleep with you just because you're nice. But there, the guy says, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to be with someone who treats me so well when you're going for the alternative. And that's where this whole controversy,
debacle
is a good one too. Debacle controversy started over this, what a nice guy is and what's the relationship to women between a nice guy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a value judgment, first of all. So, you can't really objectively declare yourself nice. You can say that you're trying to be nice or trying to act nice, but whether you are a nice person, that's somebody else's evaluation of you anyway.
Right, but that's what happened, right? These guys weren't going around saying, I'm nice. They were going around trying to treat a woman the best they could, a girl the best they could. And then somebody said, oh, well, you're just the nice guy stereotype. This was created as a dichotomy from the alpha male.
How come we're not allowed to ask the question, is she a nice girl? We're never allowed to ask if the girls
were not Jewish mothers.
That's funny.
Is she a nice girl?
No, but we should be.
Because this was created about a dichotomy of analyzing men. Do you get what I'm saying? Because these guys would get upset that the girls would go for the quote unquote jock alpha types, and then they would be labeled the nice guy because of it. So this became a dichotomy for analyzing men, and it's a way for oversimplifying men by feminism.
The ducky thing from 16 Candles, basically.
Well, if you really wanted to, you probably could argue that a lot of it goes back to John Hughes movies, yes, with the way that took over the cultural consciousness. But what about this article you found, Elliot?
Oh, yes. This was a week ago. This is an article, and it was on Thought Catalog, and basically it was a guy saying, hey, you know, I was a nice guy to you, and you didn't want me, and now I'm successful, I'm wealthy, I have all this stuff going on, and, you know, now you come crawling back to me, but I don't need you anymore, that sort of thing. The more I think about it, the more I'm just like, you know, a real man wouldn't write a piece like this, to be honest with you. I don't think that a real guy who really is secure in his person, who really has a lot going on in his life, he would not write a piece like this. So the more I think about it, the more annoyed with the column I am.
Yeah, it's a very, very bitter piece, right?
Yeah.
And it's very, very responding to the bitterness. And apparently it was responding to a woman who wrote a similar bitter piece. But I think the interesting part about it is I only think he's writing it because he's responding to being labeled in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Something you're talking about, Elliot, when you say it's a value judgment, is you're 100% right, but the value judgment has to be made individually. You can't just put people in these nice little labels, in these little boxes, and then never judge them and take them for who they are, and that's ultimately what's happening, and that's what he was responding to before. And now he's saying, oh, I've jumped boxes. Now I'm the good box, but I don't want you anymore. And he's just responding harshly to them, and I'm not saying it's right, it's equally as wrong, but that's the way he saw them, he thinks they treated him, so he's responding and treating them that way.
Well, my bigger point here, though, is, and it could just be me looking at it from a gay man's perspective, because when it comes to the battle of the genders, I'm not fully versed in that, but to me personally, I think there's so much weight put on guys, on their being nice. You know, if you're a nice guy and I'm just not that into you, I don't feel anything, or blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of onus on that. And I think what guys need to start doing, if I can offer my opinion, is they need to start asking themselves about the girl. Are the girls nice? Are they worth you behaving like a gentleman and taking them to dinner and listening to the stories or anything? I mean, are you wasting your time with this girl? Because if she's not a nice girl, she has no right to complain or to say that you're just a nice guy, because of what value is that judgment? You know what I mean? I think it's a bigger point than just that.
I agree with you, but it's so obvious from what you're saying that you really do have no idea about the war that's going on between genders. Because
I know. But I'm just
actually,
you gotta look at the girls too. Not right. All girls are nice girls. They're not all worth you being nice to them.
Right, and this leads into our next question very well, and we'll get there in a second. I just need to set it up. What you're missing, Elliot, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. In a objective world, in a psychologically healthy world, both people would judge each other and say, you know, what's the value here? What's the value I present? What's the value she presents? So on and so forth. The problem is, there is such a myth in our culture that women hold all the power sexually that guys feel like they just have to take what they can get. And what I mean by that is we've been told from the time we're young as men that we just want to have sex all the time with anyone and anything. And women are the gatekeepers, and they're the ones who have standards, and they're the ones who have values. So women are, we're told, inherently valuable. And every guy wants them, no matter what. And they just get to decide who they want. And essentially, guys don't get to decide who they want. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying that's what we're told.
Right.
And, excuse me. Got a raisinette in my throat here.
It's not a euphemism, folks.
Okay.
And this next question will show us a manifestation of that. So are you ready for the next question?
With that setup? Yeah.
Is it appropriate to classify men staring at women as rape and charge these men of this crime? Now, the initial reaction from everyone here is going to be no. Am I on the same page here? Am I correct in that assumption?
Correct.
I thought about being a dick and taking the other side, but then I thought, if I be a dick, is that also rape?
You're being a dick? Yeah.
You're raping this podcast.
Be careful. How dare you?
Right. Right, right. So I decided, yeah, so no. That's my, yeah.
All right. So here's the explanation these people have, this questioner has. According to feminist-directed policies, there is now a college which classifies men staring at women as rape and can charge them with such a crime. He links to it. It's Goshen. It's in Indiana. And the interesting thing is this site he links to references the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, as a source of these policies. So this isn't like something they made up on their own. This is a quote. Don't allow psychological rape or commit it yourself. Psychological rape consists of verbal harassment, whistles, kissing noises, heavy breathing, sly comments, or stares. These are all assaults on any woman's sense of well-being. The underlying intention is to intimidate women. They are power plays couched in the language of sex. Now, Elliot, this is what I was just telling you about. A man expressing interest, even if it's just looking, by a certain segment of the female population and the male population, quote-unquote feminists, or people who use the word feminist, not all feminists, say that a man expressing his sexuality is oppression, is a power play. Now, the only way that can be done, and that premise can be arrived at, is if you're starting from the premise that men are indiscriminate with their sexuality, and that it's all about just getting the woman to have sex with him. Because it's only a power play if the woman holds the power in the decision. Because they think the man is trying to take it from her.
I get it, yeah. I get it.
Exactly. I think, I mean, it's so interesting that we have come to a point where men are presumed rapists until proven otherwise. The act of staring as rape? Really? Like, how far have we fallen?
I cannot believe that this would hold up in court. Take it to a judge to charge somebody with rape because they were staring at you. You know, I mean, I just cannot possibly believe that this would hold up in any kind of court proceeding.
Yeah. Thankfully, we're not at that point, because it wouldn't hold up in court. You're right.
I agree with you, but it would hold up at a university hearing in front of, like, an ethics committee, for instance, where they would say this is conduct unbecoming of a student or whatever it is.
Right. And that's the issue, is culturally what it says. Because if it would hold up in front of the ethics committee, who does that give all the power to?
All of it would go to the women.
Correct, because men aren't even allowed to look at who they're attracted to. If you certainly can't look at someone, you can't talk to who you're attracted to, because they'll take that as power. Oh, well, you're only talking to me because I'm attracted to you. Well, yeah. Isn't that reasonable? And likewise, aren't you only attracted to talking to certain guys because you're attracted to them?
So in other words, they view attraction as compulsive, not evaluative. They think you find someone attractive instinctively, not because you are actually evaluating a person and finding them attractive.
Right, and they see men that way, especially.
Right. That helps me a lot.
Yeah. There was even an article recently that's been going around Facebook from everydayfeminism.com called How to Compliment Women Without Objectifying Them. And I think the article should have just been blank, but they have things like compliment her on something other than her appearance. Well, okay, but if you're just meeting someone, is it really objectifying to say something like, You're very beautiful? Like, is that so horrific that we need to teach people not to think about that?
I had to read an article undergrad, and I forget who it was by, but it was by this really feminist writer, and she talked about how she went to visit a men's prison to take a tour to learn what it was like. Which, okay, what's going to happen if a woman walks through a man's prison? A men's prison. So she was complaining that she was getting hooted and hollered at and everyone was making sexual gestures as if somehow these are representative of normal men, you know, because, you know, they don't ever see women. Did you think about that? And ultimately, right. The point of the article was when men objectify women, when they, you know, they look at them, they compliment them, they act in this way towards them, they're stealing their identities. That's what she said. You're taking my identity away from me because you're minimalizing me. You're reducing me to a sexual object.
Yeah, that's incredible. Just incredible.
And the irony of it is, by saying that, you're doing the same thing to men.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that that's all a man is. He's a one-dimensional creature.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Also, there's a sort of, you know, while the woman retains a lot of the power, especially legally here and culturally, isn't it bizarre? In a bizarre way, aren't they giving the men a lot more power than they actually deserve? Like, you can make me feel this way by what you say to me or how you look at me. Like, right, they're giving men a lot of power over their emotions.
And that's their ultimate argument. That's their trump card, what you just said. They come back and they say, well, you don't understand the history of male-female relations and how men have had power to make women feel a certain way since the history of time began, and that's why we have to respond like this.
Legally, politically, yes, 100% agree. But emotionally, psychologically, like, that's up to you at this point.
Right, they
that's
don't
up to
believe
anyone.
That, though. This is the same thing that we always talk about. People who believe that your emotions, your psychology are a result of other people, not yourself.
Yeah. And I think that's just such a...
So that's how it just works. That's how this has always worked, and not just in this context, but in others. I mean, it's another expression of the sanction of the victim, you know? You want, you know, demeaning men, telling men, you know, that they're animals, that they can't control their sexual urges, while at the same time trying to bolster their, say, we need you, and we need you to handle our emotions for us and to do this for me and to do that for me, while at the same time demeaning them. That's really what this is. It's just another aspect of that sanction.
Correct. That's a reference to Atlas Shrugged, who anyone wondered. If you want to learn about that, just ask Mark Pellegrino.
That's tweet at Mark R. Pellegrino.
And oh, we're not done with feminism yet. Not when birth control crosses with internet comments in BuzzFeed Comment Theater. This week, BuzzFeed published an article where 21 of their female employees held up cards that said, bring back the missing African women. No, I'm just kidding. That said different reasons why they use birth control, which all basically, they're supposed to be 21 different, but they all basically amount to, I can do what the fuck I want with my life, which, yes, you can do what the fuck you want with your life. We agree. So it's supposed to be this grand statement about why people are oversimplifying birth control by saying it's only used for birth control. They're saying there are other reasons to use it. And I believe this is all a response to the Hobby Lobby bullshit thing that happened, right? Where people are trying to mandate that an employer has to pay for certain things.
Right. Namely birth control.
Right. But that obviously applies outward to other things as well, right? The general principle of if you have to pay for birth control, well, then you can require the employer to pay for lots of things.
Right. One of the tweets I sent after was, so Supreme Court says employers can be forced to pay for health care as long as that health care is not birth control.
Right. Is that... It's good. That's very, very subtle. I don't know if a lot of people would pick that up. But, of course, this made the comment section go nuts. So we are going to do a reading for you of some of these comments. Are you ready, Daniel and Elliot?
Ready.
Oh, yeah.
Last names have been omitted for the sake of anonymity because I don't want these people to be too embarrassed for being stupid.
Michael from Jacksonville. Forgive me, but what the hell does this have to do with anything?
Who is trying to stop any of you from taking birth control? And that's a serious question. If there is some issue I'm unaware of, someone please let me know so I can do some research on it and form an opinion. If this is in reference to the Hobby Lobby issue, you guys seriously need to do some research before posting stuff like this.
Well, if everyone did research and only posted things that were factually correct, BuzzFeed wouldn't be able to generate the same amount of site traffic and ad click profit. You didn't seriously think these articles were designed to educate anyone, right? Next up, 12 things Sherpas wish white people wouldn't post on OKCupid.
Timothy. Using birth control is commendable and a smart and compassionate thing to do. Beats the hell out of murdering an innocent and defenseless human via abortion.
Kristen. Liked for the first sentence, disliked for the next.
Dana. From the UK. I'm so glad birth control is free in the UK. And it's funny how there's lots of US men saying, why should I pay for it? Aren't you forgetting that men also benefit from this? And don't women also pay for your Viagra? Or how about you having to pay for obesity-related diseases or smoking-related diseases? But hell no. Instead, complain about something that women genuinely need through no fault of their own.
Hold on, I need to get in character here. I'm laughing hysterically at that. Emily. Finally! Someone with some common sense?
Ryan. Holy crud. U.S. men don't complain about paying for women's birth control. Where are you getting this from? And women don't pay for our Viagra. Viagra is not a prescription pill. It's a recreational supplement, not covered by any medical plan I've ever seen.
Catherine, from the UK. All I can say to this is how glad I am to be British and live in the UK.
I think the next person, Jules, is also British, but I can't do a British accent, so English accent, so you don't want to have me try.
All right, I'll try. Agreed. So many snarky comments on here from US people not wanting to pay for other people's BC, not grasping the concept of insurance, and just generally being mean. The NHS may have many flaws, but the provision of free birth control isn't one of them.
You're just showing off now.
Let me just interject here, because I can't let that go unanswered.
I wonder how long until one of us was going to break.
NHS having many flaws, including pipes of shitty water bursting and flooding entire surgery wings with patients that are soiled and dirty with filthy, literally shitty sheets while they're trying to recover from surgery. Yeah, that's a pretty big goddamn flaw. All
right, or not making certain religious folks wear gloves during surgery or wash up because it's against their religion.
Mm-hmm.
This is true. Anyway.
Alright. The next comment is by Tori from British Columbia, which means she has a Canadian accent, which means I'm just gonna add the word hockey randomly.
Or A.
In all of this hockey A, am I the only hockey woman who wonders why we still have to pay for tampons, A, hockey A?
Lindsay. If men all had periods, you would probably be able to get tampons for free. You could always invest in a menstrual cup, though. I've heard they're cost-efficient and there's no extra waste product to dispose of.
I'm sorry.
What's a menstrual cup?
You don't want to know what a menstrual cup is. It's absolutely disgusting.
I'm not Googling it.
Okay. Brittany from Stevenson University.
No, wait. Before we get to Brittany, do people really believe that if men menstruated, tampons would be free?
Men have the magical power to create something from nothing.
Condoms are free, right?
If men had periods, you would not need anything like development of materials or anything like that. There would be no cost to create tampons.
I mean, if we're talking about birth control and men not wanting to pay for women's birth control and claiming that men would be, if men had to do it, their birth control would be free, why aren't vasectomies free for everyone?
By the way, I know what a I've seen a menstrual cup. It's like a little yarmulke, to be honest. I'm not saying that to be like racist or anti-Semitic. It literally looks like one.
Like I said, you don't want to know.
Is it a bad geomica?
A bad geomica, yes.
All right, go ahead.
All right.
I really gotta not go along with that.
Brittany anyway. From Stevenson University. But like, Viagra isn't controversial at all. Heaven forbid a man can't get an erection. Fucking ridiculous. Selfie.
It doesn't say selfie, but that was a good addition. All right, I'm going to say the school for the next person because I think the school speaks volumes about this comment. Courtney from the University of Colorado Boulder. These comments are going to give me an ulcer. When did this country turn into a bunch of corporation babying selfish assholes? Oh, think of the poor corporations. You're lucky they provide healthcare at all. Corporations are people, bullshit. Individuals should always be more important than corporations. The rich should be things to help the poor. Healthcare should be right. And all of this, well, I don't want to pay for crap, is nothing but unchecked selfishness, and it's shameful.
Victoria, who works at the Ministry of Magic. Dude, it's always been a country like that.
Courtney replies, I guess I just used to think it was better. Now go, Elliot.
Okay, Rachel. If corporations were people, then you'd be able to personally sue the owner of a corporation instead of having to sue the business. Corporations are a legal entity. People are not understanding this. Oh, not you. I meant in general.
Haley, this comment section made me lose faith in humanity.
It's me clapping in agreement.
Well, that comment can be applied to any comment section. And that concludes this episode's BuzzFeed Comment Theater. What did we learn this week, Daniel?
I learned that giant holes in the ground make for phenomenal sexual references. But let's be honest, I pretty much already knew that.
Elliot?
Well, I learned that somewhere down the road we're going to have a black, transgendered, you know, Muslim girl from Marvel.
Only Marvel, not DC?
Probably only Marvel.
And I learned not to eat Raisinets while recording the podcast, because one's going to get stuck in your throat in a really improper time.
And yeah. Drew won't be there to give you the Heimlich.
I'm Justin M. Wisneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.